Welcome to Conversations with Texas Scorecard. Well, thanks for joining us here. I am visiting with the Comptroller of Texas, Glenn Hager. We're going to talk about the state of the state's economy and get Mr. Hager to give us a little bit of an insight as to what we as Texans can expect in the state budget. And just generally looking at the state's economy, 2020 has been just a really bad year for a lot of folks. There's just no getting around it. And collectively, that means it's presented a challenging year for the state of Texas. Just real quick, for those who don't know Glenn Hager, he is the Comptroller of Texas, which essentially you can think of as the CFO of the state. He's the 36th individual to hold that position. He was first elected statewide in 2014, but had previously served in both the Texas House and the Texas Senate. He's from a longstanding farming family kind of outside the Houston area. He's a graduate of Texas A&M, as you will notice with the shirt that he is wearing. And he also happens to have a law degree from Arkansas, but I don't think he really like for me to anyone to mention that very often, do you, Mr. Hager? You prefer the small businessman angle to your background.
We'll leave it at that, Michael. Yeah, skip there. The other parts, and we'll try to not mention too often that I'm actually the state's tax collector as well. So we'll leave that part off every once in a while as well.
Keep the hate mail to a minimum, right? All right. So let's jump in here. This summer, you made a presentation to the legislature in which you noted that, you know, with a whole lot of uncertainty, the state was going to be looking at about a $4.6 billion budget shortfall. You've now come back visiting with the Legislative Budget Board a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, mate, you know, it's not going to be that dire. Give us a sense of what changed. You know, clearly no one knew much this summer, and not taking you to task for having a rosier picture now than then. But what did you and your team see in the economy that leads you to believe that $4.6 billion shortfall is probably on the really negative end now?
Yeah, so first, just kind of put in perspective, you know, the current two-year budget is what we're talking about, which ends August of next year. So September 1 of 2021 is when we start the new two-year budget cycle. So we're literally talking about this current two-year budget cycle, which originally had forecasted about a $3 billion surplus. And then right after we hit the dual headwinds in March of lower oil prices, significant impact to the state economy, as well as the COVID pandemic, businesses moving to telework, so many businesses unfortunately being shut down. You know, unfortunately, I had to use that word that starts with an R, recession. You know, the question was how deep, how wide, how long. So much uncertainty exists when you put these forecasts together, because Texas, you know, just from a perspective standpoint, is the ninth largest economy in the entire world. I mean, if you take the metropolitan area, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, or the Houston area, either one of those from a take-home pay perspective, each one of those is about the 14th largest state in the nation from a take-home pay for people working. And so my point is when you add all the regions, very complex economy, very diverse economy, but I've been saying ever since March that a couple more months of data will do us good. Still in December, 9 months later, I'm still saying a couple more months of data. And because of that uncertainty and the tie globally to the state economy, but what has changed since July, when I originally said, as the number you mentioned, instead of a $3 billion surplus, it was about a $4.6 billion deficit. What has changed since that time period is really several different factors. One, we anticipated tax collections on many streams of revenue would be down double digits, and some of them still are, whether it's hotel occupancy taxes, because people are not traveling, whether it's business or pleasure, whether it's severance tax collections from oil and gas, those are still double digit down. However, sales tax collections, and it's important to note because you'll hear me say more about sales tax and other streams, and the reason being is of all tax streams into the state of Texas, from a revenue standpoint, sales tax, depending on the year, is 56 to 60%. And so my point being, all streams are important for the health of the state budget, but sales tax, that's the big one for the state. And so therefore, sales tax for the state of Texas, they've been negative each month relatively compared to the same month a year ago, but they're not as negative as we anticipated. Now, part of that is held up because people, you and I, instead of doing vacations, we've been doing staycations. People are spending more time at home, so they're doing all these home improvement projects that they've put off for years, and they go, oh, let's go ahead and do that. People also received additional, you know, when the federal government gave the biggest pay raise the United States has ever seen with the stimulus dollars, whether we can say good or bad, the point being is that people had them, and guess what they did? They spent them. And so therefore, people are also purchasing more online. We have been for years from a retail perspective. But last session, I asked the legislature, from a fairness perspective, to make sure if you and I go into the local store to purchase an item and we have to pay sales tax, to make sure there's not a competitive advantage for those that are online. Support your local retail and make sure that it's a competitive playing field. And so the point is when they passed that legislation last session, we originally thought the state might have an additional $500 million because of the fairness perspective, ensuring that it's collected online like down in your local store. Well, instead, because we're buying so much online, it actually in the last 12 months was almost $1.3 billion, Michael. And so thank goodness the legislature put that fairness in there, because as consumers, we've shifted so much for online. I mean, if we want to get rid of it, then get rid of it for everybody. Don't just do it for one sector or another, is my point. So that obviously has helped as consumers have switched so much more online. And then lastly, the federal dollars that have come, again, good, bad, or indifferent, the fact that they're here, some of those dollars are being swapped out for state expenses related to COVID. And so therefore, those things combined, the economy not as negative as we anticipated, the online dollars, people spending in and around their homes, consumer consumption has continued to stay high in the retail sector. And then lastly, the federal dollars that are being swapped out for some of the state expenses have helped this current budget cycle. And those are the real main three ingredients to make the picture of the state of budget look better. But I keep saying, and before you ask the next question, I'm going to go ahead and say this, there's a lot of uncertainty. What's happening in December, January, and February from a consumer confidence perspective is really critical, important for the trajectory of where we go economically next year.
So, it sounds like, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like that come January the 11th, when you and your team present your analysis for the, again, taking out to the end of this biennium and then your analysis for the next biennium, it sounds like you're going to be having a whole lot of asterisks in that presentation and that report, unlike previous years, quite frankly, where you've been the guy who's going to say, here are the numbers, and you walk away. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, I think that's actually very fair. More asterisks in it than before, because that word uncertainty, uncertainty, uncertainty. And, you know, the fact is, I always make the point, Texas, we're 19% of the exports out of the United States. And we go, well, where does that put us? That puts us by far the number one exporting state out of all 50 states. And I make that point really to go ahead and back again to tie that Texas is very tied to the international economy. And so what's happening in Europe, what's happening in Asia, different countries, has an impact here. And so, you know, if governments there are shutting people down, well, that has a drag and a ripple effect on our economy. You know, it's not just what happens in Texas, but it happens what's beyond the borders. And so therefore, you know, again, what is happening with the pandemic? Obviously, you know, it's not as bad as people anticipated, but the fact is, which is good news, the fact is, you know, people still have concerns. And how do you make sure you alleviate some of those concerns so we continue to move forward? So, yes, I've said over and over in several speeches in the last several weeks, especially, that I expect me and my team, we will continue to monitor every day like we always do, but more now than ever before, to keep highlighting and making sure that if we need to make adjustments to that revenue estimate, we will do that in April or May before the session ends. Because, again, to highlight, tell me how many individuals or businesses accurately can forecast what their revenues are going to be starting 9 months from the day they do it and ending 2 years after that. And when you take into account the complexity of this economy, and so that's one reason, you know, my pledge has always been, as we see data changing, we're going to update it and make sure that not only legislators and policymakers know, but we as the public, the taxpayers, we know what's going on.
Okay, so I am going to put you a little bit into a hot seat here.
And you've never done that, Michael, to anybody. I mean, I wouldn't expect that from you. Are you kidding me?
I appreciate that. So you've been a member of the Texas House. You've been a member of the Texas Senate. You've gone through on kind of that side of things a number of budget processes. What is going to be your recommendation to lawmakers, given the uncertainty uncertainty, given that, you know, we've swung from a multi-billion dollar surplus in revenues to now, you know, some unknown amount of shortfall just for this biennium. What's your recommendation going to be to lawmakers in terms of the way they approach budgeting this year?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you know, whenever we provide forecast, we want to be more conservative, just because any forecast that you make, same as in your household, you know, what are your expenses? What is your income? You always need to budget conservatively, because there may be more expenses than you anticipated. There may be something that happens with a revenue stream. And so it's really prudent, and we need to go about that. And we've done that here in the office as well. We want to give the most accurate information and numbers we can, but we also want to make sure that on the backside, we weren't too optimistic and things didn't turn out the way we thought or really hoped they would turn out. And I think that's number one from a pillar and a cornerstone. But then from a legislative standpoint, it also means that we need to be frugal, and we need to make sure that we mind what's going on in the store. Because, you know, say, for example, people ask me, are we going to use part of the rainy day fund, the economic stabilization fund, which we're blessed with a very healthy fund because of oil and gas economy here in the last, you know, decade. But the reality is it potentially used for a downturn in revenues? Yes, but you don't spend every penny of it. You got to save it for another rainy day. And those days, you know, come. And so therefore my point is you may use part of your savings, but you don't ever use it all. And so, you know, how you go about from a revenue projection as always, and as well as an expenditure side of it, making sure that you're trying to do it in a fiscal responsible manner, because you just don't know what's happened. Who would have known we would be in the position we're in economically back in February of this year, when Texas was still leading the nation in GDP growth and job gains? Now, you know, we think we're going to get back to that, but it's going to take us another year because we have the dual headwinds and not just dealing with the pandemic and issues that are around that, but also oil and gas. And so, you know, until the oil and gas economy recovers and Texas gets back on the trajectory. But the point is, again, looking at it from a conservative standpoint, both revenues and expenditure side.
So, you know, I don't want to look like the kind of fawning praise kind of guy, but I will say this in you about you in praise, is that you have tended as a statewide elected official to kind of stay in your lane a lot. And so I know what I'm about to ask you is going to pull you dragging and screaming out of your lane, a place where you're most comfortable. But when you look at the economic stabilization fund, when you look at the rainy day fund, what do you as the comptroller, maybe, what do you as Glenn Hager, a citizen, Glenn Hager, former legislator, what do you see as the appropriate and inappropriate uses of the ESF?
Yeah, I think, you know, really, one, it was first designed for principally around when you have a significant downturn in the economy. And so how do you make sure, at least from a business side of it, and that's one thing, you know, in my agency, I said very early on, we were doing a hiring freeze, a pay freeze, reevaluated IT projects, we were cutting our expenses, but I want to make sure the business functions continue to operate, because as businesses need their tax permits and they need to make sure they have someone they can talk to work through, you need them to go and do what they need to do and not deal with government and the bureaucracy. And so, you know, my point being is, in my opinion, it's designed to make sure the business operations and functions of the state continue to operate so businesses can continue to operate. That's first and foremost. But also, it may be used for one-time expenses, you know, after a hurricane or some type of natural disaster type event, to ensure that you're able to get back going. But then lastly, from a balance standpoint, and I've told the legislature from my, because a lot of questions in the last so many years, because we've had a lot of money go into that fund, thanks to the oil and gas sector. And so the question is, what's an appropriate balance? Well, I think, you know, the CFO probably should weigh in on that. And so therefore, you know, from my vantage point, trying to maintain somewhere around a 7 or 8% balance compared to what our general or related expenses are is a healthy and appropriate balance. So, you know, does it mind that you go a little bit below that at times? Okay, if you need to, depending on the situation. But at the same time, don't spend it on something just frivolous. You keep in the lane of what it was designed for, unless you want to change it, then go ask the voters for it. But until then, this is what it was designed for. and keep it that way and make sure we have a healthy balance, you know, over time. So that's kind of my recommendation, is to try to continue to maintain a healthy balance overall for that true, really rainy day. But those are the two uses that I would say the legislature has typically used it for the most part. But those are the two and only two that it really should be used for.
Looking ahead to the legislative session, looking ahead to these, the several months of crafting the budget, the Legislative Budget Board obviously has met to set their kind of maximum growth. I think for a lot of us, you can't even imagine growth at a time like this. They've set a 7% increased spending limit. They say they can't go higher than that. What would be the target that Glenn Hager would set if Glenn Hager were the guy writing the state budget?
Yeah, I think principally, first and foremost, my office, we give them a number as well, but we give them a number based within what the question is we're supposed to give them. We can debate what that formula is my point. So the number that we give them is typically higher than what some would say, where did that number come from? One part of that is because personal income growth. Texas as a state, overall, we have been very blessed. It's amazing here in the last week, there's been several reports and accurate reports about the number of people that are leaving cities like New York, states like California, how many people are moving to the state of Texas that said, we just got to get out of these places, from the high taxes and regulatory standpoint. And so my point is, it was really interesting showing that New York City, for example, how they have been impacted because of the last 9 months. They may not have had as many people. They've had people move in as well as leave, but the people that are leaving versus moving in have a higher income. And so part of that skews the numbers is what I'm getting at, Michael, because of the personal income side. And that's one of the calculations. I think, it's been debated in the last several years whether that truly should be part of the calculation as a personal income side, because that it just looks odd when you go, well, GDP didn't grow that much. The personal income in the state has been growing, in part the oil and gas sector, manufacturing sector, a lot of different sectors. And so I think that's the real question and key. But the main thing is, most and foremost, regardless of a number, trying to make sure you keep it as low as possible and make sure you keep money in people's pockets instead of government's pockets. Because at the end of the day, you and I are the taxpayers, and we're going to spend it wiser than government will spend it on every single day.
So Glenn, for those folks who want to play along at home over the next couple of weeks, the next couple of months, what data are you and your team looking at? I'm a big believer that all of us should be checking each other's work, right? Yeah. What should folks be looking at? What are the indicators they should be keying in on that you and your team are looking at, so they can have a sense? It probably shouldn't be a surprise what the comptrollers reveals the magic box and shows number. What should folks be looking at?
The big things that we look at, real big on the high line, are what are the trends in sales tax numbers. The other ones are important, like I mentioned, but again, if you just say, oh my gosh, oil and gas severance taxes are double digit down. Hotel occupancy taxes are double digit down. Well, that's not a true accurate representation of the whole state of Texas from an economic perspective. So, the sales tax side is truly usually a lot better indicator, as well as job and employment numbers. Texas had about a 3.4% unemployment. We moved up to 13 plus there in April. We're back down to 6.5% or a little bit more than that, which is better, but we still have a ways to go, the point to where we were at that trough. And people ask me, what does the number need to be? Well, I think it needs to be back at where the record low was. Otherwise, you've got people that are out of work, you got businesses that are suffering. And so that's the new watermark and threshold. But then also we look at a lot of what we call non-traditional economic indicators right now. We look at how many people are going to restaurants, how many people are driving in their vehicles, how many people are flying in the United States in a given day. I had no clue that we had an average of 2.3 million people flying in the United States on a given day. I never knew that number. We track it every week now. We went a little over 1 million there over the Thanksgiving holidays, and now it's somewhere in about 850 or 925,000, which is a gain from the record low of 90,000 people that first week of April, but it's still nowhere near 2.3 million. And so, if you look at upwards in trajectory and employment, people flying, how many people may be driving in their cars, but it's still not where it was before. And also, I'll use a point that I was talking to a legislator right before I got on this. And I was making a point about restaurants. If you look at overall collections from restaurants for a tax perspective, they're not that far off from where they were a year ago. But that doesn't tell you the full story. If it's a dine-in only restaurant, they're down. Right. If they're a drive-through only, they're really up. You know, and so like some restaurants, if they have both and they may have their indoor closed, well, you know, government doesn't tell them to do it. They may choose and decide to go to only drive-through because they don't have the same cost. You know, their margins are up. And so, you know, I'm just making the point, even if you just look at one data point, sometimes it really doesn't tell you what the underlying pieces are in that industry sector. And that's why you may talk to one restaurant owner and they say, man, we're dying. And the other one, we're having the better year that we've ever had before. And it depends on the mix of how they're able to control their cost and where they were set up before the pandemic, either with government mandated shutdowns or two, consumer choices have changed as a result.
Well, Glenn Hager, thank you so much for taking time to visit with us. Really appreciate it. Appreciate the work you and your team do. Y'all do a lot more than just keep track of forecasting data. Your team does a great job of holding on to revenue and money that people forgot. I learned that this fall. Where can folks go to check out what money they may have forgotten about? And as we're all looking for extra pennies, where can folks go with your team?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I was going to squeeze that in whether you asked it or not. As I concluded, go to claimittexas.org. I'll repeat, claimittexas.org. And so look your name up, look your family or friend's name. You'd be shocked. You're going to find somebody that has unclaimed property. It's turned over to the state, about a 45, 60-day process to prove you. I know you may think there's only one Michael Quinn Sullivan. I bet there's some more out there, so we want to make sure it's you that is getting your money, and then we'll return that back to you. And in about a given year, we return somewhere about $300 million back to people in a 12-month period for unclaimed property. So I highly encourage you. And what you need to also do is put a calendar entry to remember to do it next year. Because even if you got it this year, in the next 12 months, companies may have money that is your property. Turn it over to us. So, you know, I highly encourage people to get into an annual basis to checking out the website. And again, that's claimittexas.org. Otherwise, thanks for letting me be on. Hope you and yours have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Likewise. Thank you, sir. And everyone, thanks for being with us. Have a fantastic day. Look forward to catching up with you soon. Adios.
Conversations is a production of Scorecard Media. If you like this episode, please rate and review it on wherever you listen to podcasts. You can learn more about this episode or find more content at texasscorecard.com. Thanks for listening.